And welcome to We Cut Heads, a Spike Lee podcast. I'm your host Spencer, and with me is he's a blood. He thinks he's tough, but it's a stroll.
I don't got nothing to prove to you.
What, are you too busy hustling in hell?
You know, I always knew there was something wrong with church, and I figured it out. It's that it irritates me. Like, that's just me. That's not the gang member version of me.
Okay.
They were insinuating they were in a gang, right? Because that didn't seem like that many people.
They're part of the Bloods. It's briefly mentioned a few times.
Right.
And they're wearing red, so like that should be a sign of.
That's true. I assume they were all firemen.
Oh. No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this is the... We're recording these out of order. I'm not sure. The 2012? Yeah, 2012 pairing. So this will be... This is Red Hook Summer, which we're recording right this one, and Amour. It's a French word, so I'm probably saying it wrong. The Michael Haneke movie. And,
you're saying it the way that I've ever heard it pronounced.
Okay. Well, French is a dumb language that doesn't make any sense to me, so I assume I'm always saying it wrong.
I see.
That's my hot take on French. I hate it. I tried to teach myself French and it didn't go well. Anyways. So, Red Hook Summer, this was, like, kind of return to features after the debacle of the World War II one.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was a...
Miracle at St. Anna.
Yeah, that. And so, like, he kind of came... So he came back with using... He used some of his own money. Or maybe, like, most of the budget was his own money for this movie. As like a comeback, and he even reunited with a co-screenwriter from Red Hook Summer.
Miracle of St. Anna, also right? Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. I said that wrong. I just realized. James McBride.
Hmm.
And I don't know if it's James McBride, but. The two movies that they co-wrote together, I really don't like.
Hmm. So what is your... I also don't like Miracle at St. Anna. It would be difficult. Like, there are parts of that movie, just like in every Spike movie, that I like. But it's the whole thing is messed. Now, this one, I actually liked a lot. Hmm. So I would like to hear what you... think are the main issues with it. And I'm not going to argue or anything like that because it's opinions.
Yeah, there are a few things I do like, but we can end on that. But I don't like the two lead kids. Their acting at parts feels like awkward on purpose, but other parts it's like it's just bad and just like it stops everything dead. The pace, like, everything, every scene feels like it takes a little too long. And just lingering a moment, which I feel like is the point of, like, it's a summer. It's like a kid's summer. It feels like forever. But at the same time, it's like, but the movie just kind of isn't, to me, is kind of a boring movie about two kids who aren't interesting to see on screen, at least to me. The connection to Do the Right Thing.
Yeah, that's fucking awful.
Yeah, it's so distracting. It's like, why would you bring that up here?
Like, first of all, listeners, if you're watching these movies in order of the ones that we're doing, I don't think we've done Do the Right Thing first, but you have to watch Do the Right Thing. And then you'll get what's going on in Red Hook Summer. Otherwise, you'll just be completely mystified.
Yeah. And,
No, that's not true. Okay, listener, that was just...
Yeah. It's set in the same universe, I guess. But that then leads to another...
Yeah.
But that leads to another thing that I can get to after this. The whole pedophilia thing is like, wait, why not introduce that earlier and dwell on it more? Because then it's like 15 minutes. Oh, he raped the kid. Now he's better because he's crying and he's upset. And then and then it's over. It's like, wait. No. This is not something you just it's not something you just kind of bring up at the very end and be like, I'm not going to talk about it anymore. Just like, no, I want more dealing with that.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels like irresponsible a little bit. It's like, if you're going to bring that up, you know, actually talk about it. It just feels so undercooked. And this breaks the movie for me, where it's like, so did the mom know that her dad was a pedophile and then
left her son with him? Yeah.
For a summer? Like, it doesn't make any sense. And this leads to so many questions.
Yeah, well, the only thing I can assume is that she doesn't know. I mean, it didn't seem like anyone else knew. Except for, you know, whoever lived in that. Well, I don't know what the situation was with who had that information or not. I like the way that the movie... That's a huge all of a sudden slice of plot you get with the last 30 minutes or whatever. But it could have become a movie where he was just like, I never did it and I'll deny it till my end or whatever like that. And he becomes the martyr, you know, like, oh, man.
Yeah.
They crucified him. They didn't even know it was true or something like that, because that's. It Spike Lee's intention was to show that, like, somebody who seems to be all good and the kid thinks he's a goody-goody, and I mean, that's part of his whole character. It's like everybody has flaws. But, I mean, that's a huge way of saying it, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think it's as... I think it's probably on the same level as the whole screwed up sex part at the end of School Days, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely get it's a huge huge pile of plot just shoveled all of a sudden.
And those kids, like, I don't want to criticize that they're, well, I guess they might be adults now, but this, they're
performers. I like the kids.
You do?
Yes, I do. You know how I am about kid actors.
I thought you would hate these kid actors because some of their delivery was just like, is this awkward on purpose?
The only times I had a problem with the dialogue coming out of the kids' mouths is when it felt like whenever they were talking to each other, it felt natural to me. But there were a couple of scenes where the main boy there, Flick.
Yeah.
As in the ant from...
A Bug's Life.
Whatchamacallit? Bug's Life, thank you.
They Foley.
Yeah. Dave, what?
It's Dave Foley doing a voice.
Oh, okay. I see.
He's a comedian. You won't know who he is.
He's in Kids in the Hall, right?
Yeah. He was the handsome one. Well, he says he was the handsome one.
Dave Foley was the handsome one?
That's what he says.
I guess he's the handsome one on when they used to do Celebrity Poker or whatever. He was one of the hosts, wasn't he? Or did you never watch that?
I don't know what you're talking about.
He used to have Celebrity Texas Hold'em, and it was like on E! Or something like that.
That's weird.
There's I think the first round... had Dennis Rodman in it. It was super awkward. Like, he gets super pissed at the table. Anyway, the interactions between him and his grandfather sometimes felt forced because he, you know, he's giving the teenage attitude type thing. But I think when the character started to be more chilled out with the situation, the actor actually let himself relax a bit more. But that's probably the only time I really had a problem with the acting. For the kids, that is.
And, like, outside of the kids, like, I thought the adults were, for the most part, really good. Because Clark Peters from The Wire, he elevated every scene he was in. Even when, like, script-wise, it was annoying or just out bad, like, it was just like, okay, he's actually trying, and he's actually doing a real full performance.
Yep, he is great. Yeah. And not denying that.
And he's not the only Wire connection to the movie, because you had a...
No, it's got that one guy.
Yeah, Isaiah Whitlock Jr. And when he showed up, I was like, what, is he going to say it? And he kept talking, and kept talking, like, come on, is he going to say it?
That's one of the problems I had. No, okay, but of course, it's like, what, 0.5% of the movie, his character? Is that shit just, for some reason, I know that's his thing, it felt forced in a weird way.
Isn't it always kind of forced?
Like, usually I feel like he's got the attitude to go behind it. It's like, oh, yeah. She, you know, and this one he was just like, she, like, like a sigh into it. Like, come on, man.
That is true. Cause, like,
there's another actor that was in The Wire, too.
The guy from It Chapter 2.
That's correct.
Who I didn't realize he was Ziggy from Season 2.
Mm-hmm. Because, mm-hmm.
like, Ziggy had long hair and was a bit younger, and I had a real shock to system when I was like, oh, it's the guy from other Spike Lee movies, and It Chapter 2. I was like, oh, fuck, that's Ziggy.
Yeah.
He's all grown up now.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah. But he has, like, what PT says one line or two lines, and then that's it.
Yeah, he just, he has a one-second discussion. He's in the end montage, though.
Yeah, I like the end montage. I think it's a little too emotionally manipulative.
Well, definitely.
Because Spike can be real shitty with that sometimes. But, like, that song I've been listening to almost on repeat on Spotify since... Watch it tonight.
Want you to know you've made me sad. Want you to know you made me happy. You are the best thing that I ever had. Want you to know you made me happy. Want you to know.
The music as a whole, I think, is great. Judith Hill did some of the original songs, and her song opens the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And she did, like, a thing with Michael Jackson, I think towards the end of his life, or is going to. But, yeah, she's just a really great musician, and she did the original music. And who's the guy I'm trying to think of? No Terrence doing the music. It's Bruce Hornsby, who did the music for, a kind of sequel to this, which I watched, because this is on Tubi. Ratchet Summer is on Tubi for free right now, and so is The Sweet Blood of Jesus. But in The Sweet Blood of Jesus, the first line in the movie is Deacon Z talking to the congregation at the church.
He says, oh, man, this is like the Avengers.
Yeah,
Spike Lee movies.
Yeah, and he says, Bishop Enoch is dead. Pray for his family.
Mm-hmm.
And it was it is kind of crazy to be like, wait. So I guess so vampires exist within this universe? So that means there are vampires in the Do Right Thing universe?
And trash cans that just fly through windows.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
And is Isaiah Whitlock playing the same cop character as the 25th Hour?
Yeah, he's always credited as
Detective Flood.
Yeah, every single time.
So there's all those movies in there too. This is just an amalgamation movie.
Oh yeah. And
I actually got emotional at the end before that montage, like the goodbye scene between the two kid actors that you think were the worst thing ever put on screen.
They're not as bad as the kid in Miracle at St. Anna.
Oh, the Italian kids. Yeah.
The little Italian kids.
Like, how can you be so bad that I can tell you're bad acting in Italian? I don't. I don't even speak the language.
Yeah. But it's weird because on one hand it's like I didn't think they were good, but on the other hand it's like it's a universal experience of like summer with spending time with your grandparents or some family that you don't want to spend time with.
Sure.
And you make friends and stuff. And it's like, I did get a little emotional during their goodbye because it's kind of sad because, like, are they ever going to see each other again?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
Well, apparently he dies.
Yeah.
According to Sweet Blood Jesus.
Yeah, he's dead. So I guess he won't be coming back to Red Hook anytime soon.
Nope. Well, they get it. You know, they could have an excellent sequel movie where he's like, you know, the kid is probably like 18 or 19 now. He has to go up there. His mom can't make it, and he has to go through his granddad's stuff.
Yeah.
I'm writing this right now. Meets up with Chaz again. Walks by that one piece of cement. Still got the markings in it.
Yeah, they go to the Red Hook. Building blocks.
Mm-hmm. But he also finds out there's an evil kayak developer that's trying to take over and gentrify the rest of the neighborhood.
Yeah. Apparently, Spike put, because this is like such a personal movie for him, he put his own kids in the kayaking scene. Or at least one of his kids.
Are those the drowned kids that are in the background?
No, they're the other kids you don't get close-ups of.
Yeah.
But like, apparently, also probably just to fill up the scene, he's like, hey, do you want to go kayaking? And he's like, sure, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Again.
Yeah. I think both of them are on Instagram. And like, his son like designed a pair of Nikes, apparently.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
He had a short section where he was just using people for one-off things, like Red Hook Summer's cinematographer Kerwin Devonish. He did the Michael Jackson documentary and the Do the Right Thing 20 years later thing, which was not, I think it was produced for one of the DVD releases or something like that, but not much under his belt. And then what was it? The editor, Himena,
is
Chirac, Red Hook, and Passover, and that's it.
Oh, yeah.
And James McBride, like you said, he only did the two movies.
I think that's for the better. I don't think McBride brings out the best in Spike.
Maybe after Red Hook Summer, he was like, you know, it's not working out with these people. I'm just going to start cutting.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe McBride realized I should just write books and not write. I think he's an author. But, like, this is part of Lee's, like, Chronicles of Brooklyn series. So it's, she's going to have it, Do the Right Thing, Crooklyn, Clockers, and He Got Game in this movie.
Hmm.
And of the ones we've covered, which one of the Brooklyn series do you like the most? Or, and Do the Right Thing.
Oh, say it again.
She's going to have it, Do the Right Thing, Brooklyn, Clockers, He Got Game.
So the only one we've seen is he got Game in this one, we've covered so far.
That.
If I have to choose between those two, I think I will pick Red Hook Summer because there are some parts of He Got Game, like the whole porn sex scene that just happens in the middle of that, I could just do without.
Yeah.
If I had to pick up the ones that we, you know, out of all of them.
And Crooklyn.
The ones we haven't covered. Crooklyn is your choice?
No. No, he got game. Basketball, oh, yeah. Ray Allen. It's Denzel's best performance.
His best performance?
I think so. He's great.
You think it's better than...
Malcolm X?
Malcolm X?
Yeah. I feel like his character is a more troubled, more complex character.
Well, you think it's better than Inside Man?
I have to see that again. I only see that movie in pieces.
He doesn't have to do much acting. He's just kind of cool, yeah. Denzel in it.
He got game. He's playing against type. He's a shithead. Like, he's not a good dad. He tries, but he keeps fucking up.
Never met the man, you know, he might not be that nice. I mean, he seems to have raised a perfectly healthy son, so
yeah.
I don't know what that says about it.
I'm saying, like, acting wise, like, he got a game, like, he's playing against his usual type.
Like, yeah.
He's definitely playing, like, a bit meaner and darker than he usually goes.
Right.
And I just, like, in, like, Training Day, is a little too cartoonish and not as nuanced.
Yeah, definitely.
It's fucked up he got an Oscar for playing a corrupt cop, and it's like he should have gotten it for Malcolm X. Even though, like, Oscars don't matter, it's like, how can you ignore Denzel Washington like that?
I mean, who did, was that Antoine Fuqua who did Training Day?
Mm-hmm.
He was an African-American filmmaker, right?
Yeah, he is.
Okay. Well, I guess they were ready to present to then a director and an actor possibly getting the same amount of credit. Because that's what I was thinking, like, for Malcolm X, like, I don't want to reward Spike Lee.
Yeah, I can see that happening. And he got game, I think, should have gotten more attention because the forgotten one.
Mm-hmm.
One of the forgotten ones. But, yeah. No,
we finished the ancient Ramos Flood, or Amos Flood collection.
We have?
Yeah, 25th Hour, She Ate Me, and now Red Hook Summer.
Oh. He was in Chirac as a club owner, very briefly.
Oh, as a club owner, yeah.
Yeah, not the same guy. But he does the thing he always does.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, it's great.
It's not just the character, that's the man himself.
But, okay, so what did you think of the role of women? Is this typical Spike shit to you, or is it, or do you think he's actively, is this a step up from the usual?
Well, all the women were the positive parts of the movie. You know, the women of the church were always trying to encourage the bishop, and they all had, like, you know, they were all behind him until a certain point, you know. But even then, there you see that lady with the wheelchair saying, like, you know, we're still with you. I get the only one that might possibly be an irresponsible version a character would be the mom. But we don't know what the situation, what she knows about her father and what she doesn't.
Yeah. That's just too much mystery there. It's like, I don't know, I want a little more.
Mm-hmm.
A little more there. And,
Yeah.
Yeah, and some of this feels like, the great vampire movie. Speaking of vampire movies, The Transfiguration.
I thought you were talking about,
Does Who Play Jesus?
No. That one with Jim Carrey. You know what I'm talking about?
Vampire? Oh. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I forgot what it's called. Yeah, like, Cleavon Little's in it. Anyway, no, but, some of Red Hook Summer reminds me of The Transfiguration, another New York set, like, about a black kid like in that rough neighborhood. I think I might be Red Hook potentially, but that's like a similar setup where in that movie there's a he's kind of a loner kid, not many friends, just like Flick. The parents are dead, and the older brother who raises him was a veteran of the Iraq War, and Flick's dad died in Afghanistan. And there's the stuff with the dead rat, where he says, I like taking pictures of dead things. And that, in the trench generation, the kid likes to, I think it's Milo, he likes to watch slaughterhouse footage. Because he's a pretty disturbed kid. But yeah, there's a couple like really strong connections to that. Although the Transfiguration, I think, got much better. But because as much as I love it, it's just so oppressive. I don't know if I want to sit through it a second time. And also like, yeah, like poverty and stuff like that.
Sure.
Yeah, but there's a lot of crossover. And it feels like Crooklyn reversed, where Crooklyn, like, the one of big events, I guess the big event was Troy going back to, no, going to family in the South, where, and this is the South going to New York.
Right. Another, yeah, it is, yeah, that's good call there. That's, you know, that would be like the movie that happened because the screen format changed there. It was suddenly we're all on iPad 2s.
Yeah. But you didn't find him annoying where he's like, there people would say it wrong. He's like, iPad 2. You didn't mind that?
I mean, no, because kids, you know, preteen kids
are annoying.
Like that are that irritating. Yeah, so. I mean, trust me, my nephew's not even near that age, but if I say something wrong, he's telling me what it's actually called, even though, you know, I'll call it a tablet. He'll call it, no, it's an iPad. Like, okay.
Yeah. And yeah, this, like, typical Spike Lee stuff, though, like, names and identity. But, like, it's so, everything's so on the surface, where, like, everything is on the surface usually, but this is more like, since he produced it with his own money, he had more control over it, so there's probably less people to tell him, like, maybe don't do this. Maybe, like, rework some of this. And some of it was just too on the nose even for him. It was just... You don't think so?
Example. Give me.
The discussion... Where is it? With the names... Because that does feel like a beginning, because Flick is talking, saying, like, well, I call myself Flick. That's the name I chose. And they say, keep going back and forth. And is this, like, this does happen in so many movies, and it's just, and it's not refined at this point. It's kind of less, like, feels more slapdash. I think I'm saying, like, don't call me Silas. My name is Flick. And it's like, and usually there's like, it's just written better and there's more flow, and like Spike has a very particular flow of dialogue that it comes in spurts here, but it's like in that scene and a few others, like it just really sticks out, like maybe someone should have stepped in. And
yeah, see, I wonder how much dialogue coaching he got, like, from any young people at all, if he did at all, you know. That's a problem in all movies, basically, where adults write, you know, parts for younger people, children, teenagers, that trying to imitate what they think they would sound like, not actually finding out or getting a young person to write the dialogue.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of things that, like, whenever it's in the apartment, I'm afraid that's why I was afraid to happen, because it happened a bunch of times.
In the whole thing of the discussion at the end, where the sister, the lit one for sister Shirley, the one who likes the bishop,
yeah,
Chaz's mom, it's just so on the nose, like, you're too old-fashioned, and it's, like, not more complex than that.
Right.
And it's just, like, it's not much nuance to it. Usually there's a little more nuance, kind of, like, has that, like, Spike Lee flow and, like, just, like, a rhythm to it, and it just feels like it's missing.
Yeah.
And that scene just, for me, drags a little too long of them repeating, like, about being too old-fashioned. It's like, okay, can you said, like, 5 times already. It just drags and drags.
Yeah, I mean, the movie's definitely overly long. I wouldn't disagree with that. You probably cut down a bunch of the scenes where we're proclitizing to... No, I mean, not even the church scenes. I mean, just the scenes where... like you said, they're trying to lay out the point of the plot over and over again. I think I was reading a review on Letterboxd mm-hmm. that was actually referencing the Roger Ebert review. Mm-hmm. And I guess in his review, he was talking about how in She Hate Me, or maybe this was actually a Letterboxd user. Anyways, they were saying that this movie is similar to She Hate Me in which... Because Spike Lee feels that it's more important to get the message across that he wants to get across than whether or not the audience is going to like the film. So I don't even remember what the She Hate Me point was.
She Hate Me had a lot of things to say. I'm just not sure.
Lesbians are bad? Yeah.
I think lesbians are good. Wall Street is bad.
As long as they're attractive.
Yeah.
And, you know, in this one, like you're saying, dialogue, just punching it forward. But that felt like Spike Lee dialogue to me more. Like, if I think about his dialogue, there are things that are just laid out in a matter of fact, like we're doing a play instead of being actual human beings kind of way, unfortunately. Either works for you or it doesn't.
Yeah, Do Right Thing is full of it, but, like, Do Right Thing is, right. like, very, like, it's that, but it's also very, like, poetic and the... What's that? The Amy Nicholson podcast, Paul Scheer, like, they say, like, they talk about, like, it's, like, Shakespearean.
Unspooled,
like, it's, like, in Do Right Thing, it comes as, like, Shakespearean at times, the way it, like, floats mm-hmm. and has, like, poetic, like, rhythm to it. And, like, his movies after that still do, but, like, it's not quite... But he never was able to repeat that. Even though Chirac, he tried with, like, the... I forgot how he wrote it, but, like, wrote it in a poetic way, like, following a certain poetic formula.
Right.
But, like, yeah, in this... I forgot. I lost where I was going with that.
No, I hear what you're saying. That's the way his writing style... Is it like branches from the Shakespearean style that he started off his career with?
Yeah, like,
and even things where, like, he's talking in slang. Like, there are parts of Malcolm X that are definitely like we're reading lines to each other with this rhythm, and the rhythm is more important to the scene rather than whether or not we're. Actually portraying our characters in the emotional way that we're supposed to or something like that.
Yeah. No, but,
I thought Thomas Jefferson Bird was really good in this.
He's always the best. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love his whole recurring thing of talking about the stock market.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you were out there telling them to buy Apple. Yeah, sure, buddy.
Yeah, I think, He's barely in the Sweet Blood Jesus. He's in a couple scenes as the same character, and the organ player TK is also in the Sweet Blood Jesus, but he's in it less. But I love the moment where TK, it's during the first sermon I think, and he's talking about baby mamas and single mothers, and TK just says he ain't no man. And it's just really funny, because where it's placed, but, kind of like, yeah. You know, sermons, like, I don't know, like, it got old, I liked when they're singing in church, because, like, any musical moments, and it's, like, totally worked. Like, he knew how to, like, the show, like, a church singing, and just, like, you get, like, the woman doing, like, the opera vibrato stuff, and it's shot in a way, it's magnetic, and this just feels like, and it charges you, it's, like, because it's, like, a great moment of everyone singing, even though Flick doesn't want to, you know, join in, but then he starts preaching, it's like, okay, can we go back to the singing part?
I mean, Clark Peters entertained to watch what he's doing it, at least.
Yeah, he's better than John, not John Lithgow, the guy from Chirac.
John Lithgow. Yeah. who was that? That was a guy from Better John Off Mal- Dead.
Yeah, being John Malkovich.
John Cusack.
That's it. Yeah, like, I felt Peter was better than Cusack as playing, like, a minister.
Yeah. Well, to go back to the singing parts there, I found this way more interesting than anything that happens in Sweet Blood of Jesus. Those are my least favorite parts of the movie, because they just go on.
The church scenes?
The church, yeah, in Sweet Blood of Jesus. And this one, him going, because there's not a huge crowd in the church, but him going up to each individual person, we actually hear these people's voices, even the people who, like, stutter, you know, or that are a lot quieter, and, you know, of course, some of them are great singers and stuff like that. I really, really like that he did that.
Yeah. That's, like, adds, like, that's how magnetic those moments are. Okay, yep. So there's a line that I'm trying to... I'm going to run by you. Since you saw it, you might remember it. When they're talking about whether or not God exists. And, I don't know. Like, I wrote it down because I'm just trying to, like, piece how I feel about it. But, Clark Peters says, you can't see God's purpose, but believing in what you don't see gives you power. Otherwise, you can't be free.
I'm sorry, was that English?
Yeah.
Okay, say it again slowly.
You can't see God's purpose, but believing in what you don't see gives you power. Otherwise, you can't be free.
Ah.
What's that supposed to mean exactly?
I mean, this isn't the right podcast for this, but it's it's saying that you needing, you know, it's the whole Doubting Thomas thing. You needing evidence that your prayers are going to answer your weakness. The belief and the trust in God. God being there and God taking care of us is what gives us the power, you know, and you won't have that power until you just let go and let God.
All right.
And it's not good. I mean, that's a, you know, in my opinion.
Okay. Yeah. Cause in a moment, like I didn't, it felt false. Like when you were saying it to Flick, and I think it's a feeling that Flick was buying it. Even at the end of the movie, I don't get the feeling Flick would bought into.
I mean, he's a preteen kid. I mean, you can be manipulated. I mean, like, he's clapping along church, singing on the church. That's what happens. Like, I remember ending up at, or being at, like, church camp and stuff like that. And it was like entering as a casual Christian, and by the time I leave, I'm like, yeah! Jesus!
Yeah, I get you. I get what you're talking about. I did similar things at church in junior high and high school, early high school. But, okay, so there's, so I'm sure you noticed Nate Parker was in a movie.
Yes, I did.
So remember, what happened to him?
Something about Birth of a Nation.
Do you know why the allegations towards him. Do you remember those?
No, I don't. Uh-uh. I just know something he did was why everyone was like, don't support Birth of a Nation.
There are rape allegations from the early 2000s.
Oh, okay.
And the woman who accused
him... Like when he was making this movie.
Yeah, like 2003, I think. But it was that the woman killed herself.
Oh.
So there's... damn it. There's some weird, murky... that whole story is like kind of weird and murky, and she's not here to speak for herself anymore, so it just adds a layer of like, what really happened? I don't know. And so, having Nate Parker in this movie where like a character is revealed to have like a past of sexual abuse is like, it's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
And,
it didn't, like, I didn't recognize him. I'm not too familiar with his work. He was really good in Beyond the Lights. But I don't think when I saw Beyond the Lights, which was earlier, or towards the end of last year, that I realized that that's who that guy was.
Yeah.
I was all about Goo Goo.
Yeah, didn't a black woman direct Beyond the Lights?
Yes, lady.
Okay, yeah.
Gina Prince Blythewood. Also did Love and Basketball.
Oh, I like Love and Basketball until he plays for the Lakers. And I'm like, fuck this asshole.
Yep, screw that guy. It's
fucking Lakers.
But, just kidding, I love the Lakers, shut up.
Yeah, because you're brainwashed, that's why.
Yes, I am.
I think we might do Beyond the Lights. Yeah, I've been thinking about maybe doing that one.
I thought it was really good.
Okay, yeah. And, anyway, but it's like, having Nate Parker is just like, okay, this is odd, but Spike is a big supporter of Nate Parker.
Mm.
Well,
Spike doesn't always make the best choices.
Yeah, like he said, I think it was last year, like, we should forget the past and let's just move on, and he's, like, supporting his new movie.
Mm.
Which, I don't know if it came out or is about to come out or something, but, like, Spike is kind of like the big Nate Parker defender.
Well, you know, it's unfortunate, but not surprising.
I mean, he loved Kobe Bryant, too.
Right, yeah. I mean, everybody used to love Kobe.
And
honestly, I still have affection for Kobe Bryant. That's not the problem. Yeah, Michael Jackson. Okay, yeah, that's
Nike. There's a whole track record of just like not great things he supports.
Yeah,
like seemingly unconditionally at times.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm not saying I believe. I don't know. The Nate Parker stuff is so murky and weird, and we'll never know. It's just a whole lot of, like, this is odd. Like, I wish more people were... That's one that... I don't know.
No, it's complicated, and probably not something we should try to solve.
Yeah.
Like, I always lean towards believe the victim, so I will take that road. But I just like anyone else in the situation, I wouldn't know what actually happened.
Well, so some stuff in this stuck out as like in the wake of the R. Kelly documentary from last year stuck out as like, oh, this is unfortunate. And it's a very minor thing where Chaz's mom is chastising her after like because her mom realized that they've been eating all the chips.
Yeah,
and it's like she calls her daughter fast.
Yeah,
which is a thing that happens to young black girls. They're called like they're more sexualized at an earlier age, and called fast and like, slutty earlier on and more sexualized early on, and it's kind of, I don't know if it's like trying to make a point here, just like it really stuck out now. It's like, oh, this is a strange thing to have here.
Well, I mean, that could go with his usual attitude towards women. Like he likes to like point in a certain direction, like whether or not he's saying it's wrong or not, he sees it. Yeah. But it's never like it's not feminist text.
Yeah, I mean it is a reflection of real life, but at the same time, it's a Spike Lee movie, so it's like I'm not sure what if it's more one or the other.
Yep, who knows? Written by two men, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing of everything is too on the nose, even for Spike, is the wet cement metaphor.
Mm.
Which is like, they're not fully formed yet because they're kids, and like they keep messing with the wet cement, and it's not set in stone yet.
See, I didn't get that metaphor. I thought you were talking about crazy white women.
I mean, yeah, crazy white women too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the wet cement thing really stuck out as like a sore thumb this time. I was like, I don't know. On one hand, like, it's a good metaphor because, like, they're kids and they're going to do stupid stuff. On the other hand, it's like,
yep.
Thematically, it's like, you could have done something more. Now you think it's too obvious of a metaphor?
Like I said, I didn't get it.
Okay.
But this is the second time you've seen this, so.
Yeah. And, speaking of crazy white women, there's a moment that feels like Get Out. That feels like you could, Marcus, if you're listening to this, I'm not sure if you've done this side by side, but during the confrontation of the victim in the Spike Lee cam,
yep.
He cries a single tear.
Yep.
Just like Daniel Kaluuya does in Get Out and Lupita Nyong'o does in Us.
Yep.
It's like close-up, face, center, single tear.
Floating.
Are you talking about the Spike Lee cam?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you were talking about Get Out, because I don't remember any Spike Lee cam in that.
No. He's in the dark place, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, when he gets the close-up shot here. Okay, yeah.
No, the tear running down the cheek is he's strapped to the chair, I just mean.
Okay, But yeah, it's interesting that the Spike Lee cam in this, and it's sequel, The Sheep Like Jesus, are in the same place.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's maybe that's what it's supposed to be. The thing is calling to a higher place, or a come to God moment or something like that. I didn't, probably not. I was just thinking of
I guess the three play G
of Spike Lee and the other guy huffing glue, and all of a sudden they got the floating cam going.
Yeah, but like with the three play Jesus, it's totally referenced like calling to a higher power, realizing a need for change,
and yep.
This is more just someone confronting their abuser.
Right. In the eyes of God.
Yeah.
Before all men and women. Before the... What? Anyways. And in Black Klansmen, they're floating towards that burning cross. That's Jesus.
Yeah. Well, we talked about an episode. That's like the one truly, like, only really Spike Lee moment. Because the rest of the movie is... It feels like Spike Lee, but it doesn't at the same time. And that's like Spike saying, oh yeah, this is a Spike Lee movie, in case you forgot.
Mm. Yeah.
Because that's not until like the very last 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But, Do you buy it when the bishop says God fixed him and he's a changed man? Do you believe that? Or do you think he's just in a moment? like saying that.
I mean, how can we say whether or not the movie doesn't allow us to see that part? That's what he believes.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like it's, you know, this whole like I'm a widower type thing. He has a daughter though. Jeez, it's confusing.
Yeah, it's confusing.
I still find the movie very good, but there are some things that I have questions about.
It's okay to like a movie.
No, I heard it isn't.
Okay.
In fact, if you like a movie, you need to take a long look at yourself in the mirror and really figure out what it's about.
Yeah. I do like after he's beaten by Nate Parker, there's a long walk of shame where he's like covered in blood.
Right.
It's like, I think there are a couple cuts, but it's almost entirely one take. And it's like a really impressive shot of him walking from the church to the brick apartment building.
Right, it's like Jesus, you know, with the cross, so he's getting crucified. No, wait.
What?
I was just trying to make some more movie metaphors for you.
I don't know, I thought it looks cool.
Yep. I mean, that's another thing, like, you know, he gets the crap beaten out of him. It's not like save me, or like, how could you do this kind of thing. It's like he wants to be punished at that point for whatever he's been trying to hide, and
yeah.
Later with the lineup scene.
And, before that, like, during that, when he's being confronted, there's a moment where the accuser says his real name, which ties back to the whole name thing and choosing your own name, thus choosing your whole identity. Basically the whole everything Spike Lee, the core of Spike Lee as a filmmaker is your identity and who you choose to be.
Sure.
It's kind of one of the central things in the mm-hmm. thing.
I see. I mean, do you think Mookie's real name is Mookie?
No, but I don't think...
See, we're all picking our names.
That's an ensemble movie. There's not enough... If it focused on Mookie, I'm sure you'd get his real name and, like, why he chose a name and shit like that.
Do you think Radio Raheem's mother actually called him Radio?
I think his name's Raheem.
Okay. Oh, man.
Yeah, but like, besides that, like, I like Tom Stretch and Bird whenever he shows up. He hasn't been in a Spike movie lately. I think he's in a new one coming out this year.
Yeah, old man.
He's in the 70s now.
Yeah?
Yeah. No, 60s. He from 1950, never mind.
I don't think I've seen, like, I know we've seen him in other Spike Lee movies, but after this performance, I was kind of like, I need to see this guy in more things. Because him just playing the, you know, intoxicated kind of, you know, he seems like a loser or whatever's going on, but it's almost like he's more deeply in tune with what's going on in this neighborhood than the bishop is even knows, you know.
Yeah.
All he sees around him is death and sadness and debt.
Yeah, he's the smartest person there, but no one wants to give him time of day. Because he's just some drunk.
Even his own niece. Yeah. No, actually, I mean, the kids... That's another thing. There's no, like, oh, we reconciled with this guy, even though he's bossing us around kind of thing. There's not really that many moments like that, except for between the bishop and his grandson.
That's true. Okay, so I checked the cast list for the new one, the Five Bloods.
Yep.
Jefferson is not in it.
But no Nate Parker?
No Nate Parker either. But,
well, he's blood.
Giancarlo Esposito. Isaiah Whitlock Jr. and Clark Peters. And some people from Black Klansman.
That's awesome.
The Walter guy. The not Norwegian. He's Finnish, I think. The guy from Vikings.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
And the main Nazi antagonist guy.
Yeah. Oh, and Derry Lindo.
KKK, whatever.
Derry Lindo's finally coming back to the Spike Lee movie.
Yes. based on that cast alone, I'm excited.
Oh, Kevin Wilmot. Okay, so that means it'll be better.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Hey, you never know what you're going to get. It's like a box of chocolates.
Yeah, but Kevin Wilmot brings out good things on Spike. But also, like, I don't know. I have mixed opinions on him. He's not as bad as James McBride. At least I think so. But, yeah, that's kind of it. Like, I still thoroughly don't like this movie. There's stuff to talk about, clearly, but I just really don't like it.
I mean, the prevailing opinion, from what I can see, seems to be that it's middle-of-the-road mediocre and bad at worst. Like, I think that, I don't know why it worked for me, but it did. Like, I found it emotionally involving. Like I said, I liked both the kid actors, especially Chaz. Tony Lasythe?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, never been in a movie as far as I can see. I think that she felt like a real character, felt like a real person, rather. The kid, Jules Brown, I could take or leave, but
yeah, he looked like
when he was acting off of her, I think there was like realism to what they were doing.
Yeah. One more thing: the ending, the last shot during the montage,
mm-hmm.
when you get the rainbow over Chaz.
Mm-hmm.
That this reminds me of Emma Mora, because that's like a deep cut reference to Emma Mora, to two movies. The first one, Black Rain from 1989, and that one, there's a line where I think the grandma and family, it's kind of his take on an Ozu movie, but like Emma Mora, so it's going to be like dark and depressing, and it's not a funny one, it's just more dark and upsetting. But there's a line where I think the grandma or old woman says, like, whenever you see a rainbow, you know it's a miracle. And then cut to 2001, Emmore's last movie, Warm Water Under a Red Bridge. The movie ends with a woman ejaculating from an orgasm, and you see the ejaculate fly across the screen, and a rainbow appears.
Oh, wonderful.
And when I first see a rainbow appear on the screen, I can't help but think of that the final shot in the final Emma Moore movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful statement.
Yeah, I mean, it's a miracle.
It's a great loss.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is one more thing I wanted to talk about in context of this movie. I know he was putting his own money into the movie as producer and stuff like that, but couldn't they afford a better fake dead rat?
Oh yeah,
it looked like it was made out of felt.
It looked like a cat's toy. It doesn't look like a real thing at all.
Yeah, I just thought it was a funny detail.
Yeah, and also it ended reminds me of Uncle Boo and Me, and our style is in Cemetery of Splendor. I don't know how to say the guy's name, but he's a Thai director, and the way he uses music in the last like 5 minutes of those two movies feels like the way Spike uses it here.
Yeah,
where it's like emotionally it all comes together, although in Uncle Boon and Cemetery Splendor it comes together I think better. Well, like, yeah, a lot better, but like it's a similar effect of, like, suddenly, you know, like, this big emotional ending.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's it.
Any rainbows?
No rainbows.
Boo!
So they aren't miracles. But, yeah, this is, I think this is May or June? I can't remember. But,
It's 2021.
Yeah, this will come out in May or June. I can't remember. But the next one will be Amour by Michael Haneke. It won the Palme d'Or. And Hanukkah. He says it Hanukkah, so I don't know. I guess say Hanukkah then.
Wait, the director says it Hanukkah?
That's how he pronounces his name.
All right, well, then we should pronounce it the way he pronounces it. You know.
His habit to say it other way. But, yeah. And with Amanda, a.k.a. W. Mass Liberty on Twitter. And she's been on Wrong Reel a few times talking about classic Hollywood, pre-code Hollywood, Betty Davis. She's been on Flickhouse Canada a few times. Maybe one time. A few times. Talking about the Ghibli movie with the Tanukis with the big nuts.
Yeah.
I forgot what that one's called.
Balls Out.
Yeah. No, Pouches and the Disney dub, not Balls.
Mm-hmm. And check out our huge pouches.
Yeah, but yeah, listen to check her out on those, and she'll come back again in a month from then for While the Heart, because she didn't want to talk about Dance of the Wolves. I understand. Sure. So, yeah.
Do you want to talk about, like, one movie from 2012?
Sure, yeah.
All right. Let me see. The Audition, no. Betty Page, no. Punisher, gross. All right. Oh, yeah.
Okay, I have one. And it's a plug for an upcoming guest.
Okay.
You probably know which one I'm talking about.
Nope.
Moonrise Kingdom.
Oh.
Yeah,
Are we doing that one?
No, but,
They did the book.
Sam from the movie Jared Gilman will, as of now, appear later on for She's Gonna Have It episode. But Jared Gilman is a cool kid. He's on Twitter. He goes to film school and shit. Moonrise Kingdom is a great movie. Not saying that because he's an upcoming guest, because it's legitimately a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
It made me cry a whole lot when I saw it the one time. And Wes Anderson movies always, actually, only all except for one have made me cry at the end.
Sure.
Isle of Dogs, which is, I think, is his weakest one, personally. But, Moonrise Kingdom, it's fucking great. It's not like Wes Anderson. Don't tell me, because I don't care. I know it brings out very aggressive attitudes from people for some reason.
You know, people got to get angry about something.
Yeah. I don't like... I'm not a fan of, like, Jarmusch, but I'm not always spouting off of how I hate Jarmusch and shit.
Mm-hmm.
Or... You know, it's I don't get why saying Wes Anderson in some spaces... immediately gets like, fuck you. It's like, okay, I guess I like it. Grow up.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway. You got one, 2012?
Yeah, so the only one that I really, really want people to check out if they haven't is Drug War, directed by Johnny Toe.
Oh,
I'm
interested. I like Johnny Toe.
Yeah. It's a movie about a cop. One of them is a undercover type thing, but they're basically about to break this case, and they get do a drug bust and get somebody to kind of flip sides so that they can try to get information on the higher ups and stuff like that. But what happens is a series of events that progressively get more crazy. And the cop has, you know, one of the cops has to do some stuff, undercover type stuff that is crazy to watch. And this guy that they think they have turned, you know, may or may not be working against them. It's laid out in such an entertaining, action paced, thrilling way. I have two copies of the movie. I have it on DVD and I have it in digital because I couldn't find the DVD for a while. So I was like, screw it, digital. And then I found the DVD and I was like, I want to have a copy so that I can lend it to people.
All right. Yeah.
I'll so check that very out. Much recommend that. Yeah.
I've only seen one Johnny Toe movie. I liked it so much. I was like, I got to see more of them. Yeah. That was like 5 years ago. But I still vividly remember how awesome that movie was.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and for May, what is a special episode coming up?
Come on. Tasmanian Devils.
No. Remember, I made some changes.
Nah, that's all right.
Oh, that will be...
Everything's in flux.
Yeah, it will be the Charles Burnett one, which will be To Sleep With Anger and or Killer of Sheep with...
sure, my Criterion Channel.
Sleep With Anger is also on Amazon Video, last I checked.
Very cool.
Is Killer of Sheep on there, too?
I don't know. Let me see.
And special guest Scott Thurow from the Zebras of America will be on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think Scott will be back shortly after that with Mo' Better Blues. Because he's a musician, so I think why he likes Mo' Better Blues.
What was the name of the other one you were asking about?
Other what?
Something about sheep.
Killer of Sheep.
Killer of Sheep. Okay, yeah, sorry.
Burnett was one of the L.A. Rebellion guys. Killer of Sheep is kind of the most accessible one of the L.A. Rebellion, which isn't saying a lot because those movies are harder to find, unfortunately.
Mm.
And also, we'll have a secret episode around that time. But I won't say what it's on, but... Yeah, it'll be a nice little surprise.
Yeah.
A little fun one. That one I just asked you about because we were trying to pick what we're going to talk about.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one.
Wink! No, that one is not on Criterion Channel.
Okay. Anyway, so, yeah. That's coming up. More streaming and shit. I guess it's a depressing movie. It's Michael Haneke, so I bet it is depressing, but who cares?
Yeah, so get your best buddies, open up some brewskis, and turn on Amour.
And then do a double feature with White Ribbon.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. See you guys next time.
Bye.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. It made no sense to change email, so it's the same feed. The show can be found at podbean.com and Spotify and other places you can find podcasts. Please rate and review whenever possible. The logo is by Josh Hollis. The music is by James Fell. And thank you for listening.